Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on mind control and world control right after this. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. Jesus of Nazareth held that same view, and he said so in Matthew 24, verse 22, and he said, "Except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive." Now, there are 64 of these life-threatening problems described in the Scripture dealing with this New World Order and the Global 2000 genocide plan. And the Scripture teaches preparation for that great tribulation, not apathy and indifference. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, people like the Kennedys and Spectres and Hillary Clinton or that guy John in the Justice Department, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. Now, in order to do that, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now, the number 417-273-4967. And my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org, click onto the email, and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. We've been reviewing Mind Control, World Control, written by Jim Keith. It's published by a little off-the-wall publishing company called Adventures Unlimited Press, 1 Adventure Place, Kempton, Illinois, 60946. Again, that's Adventures Unlimited Press, 1 Adventure Place, Kempton, Illinois, 60946. I recommend it highly. Well documented. Has all the names, dates, places, facts, witnesses, and evidence. We're talking about Jonestown, that compound, remember, down in Guyana, and mind control. The Jonestown compound in Guyana consisted of an hierarchical structure with an elite composed of all-white male camp guards who received special privileges and who were allowed to leave the camp freely and to carry money. Some of the white guards had been employed as mercenaries in Africa and elsewhere. The guards survived the Jonestown tragedy. The rest of the camp was 90% women, and 80% of those were black, and they existed under slave labor conditions, working 16 to 18 hours a day with miserable rations. When black members of the temple arrived from the United States, they were bound and gagged before being taken to the compound. And once inside Jonestown, perceived infractions led to forced drugging and public rape, torture, and beatings. The Jonestown mass suicide, or murder, whichever it happened to be, was probably set off by the arrival in Guyana of Congressman Leo Ryan, who was perhaps the most active investigator in Washington of the CIA and its abuses, and arguably number one with a bullet on the CIA's lengthy hate list. Among other accomplishments, Ryan had introduced the Hughes-Ryan Amendment to the National Assistance Act, transferring the overseeing of the CIA from the Armed Forces Committee, known for looking the other way in matters relating to the CIA, to the International Relations Committee of the House and the Senate. Ryan had uncovered information linking the CIA to the creation of mind-controlled cults, including the Unification Church of Reverend Sun Myung Moon and the Symbionese Liberation Army. In response to stories of atrocities at Jonestown, Ryan decided to investigate for himself, and that determination sealed his fate. After traveling to Jonestown and attempting to return to the States, Ryan and several reporters and a Jonestown defector were killed on an airstrip at nearby Port Kituma, with the masses or the mass Jonestown deaths taking place shortly thereafter. Observers reported that Ryan's group was killed by armed men who acted like zombies. Cheering was heard 45 minutes after the mass death at Jonestown, and those persons have never been accounted for. And for that matter, practically no one at Jonestown has been accounted for. Robert Pastor, an aide to Zbigniew Brzezinski at the time, was the national security advisor to Jimmy Carter, sent orders to the U.S. military to remove all politically sensitive papers and forms of identification from the bodies. Dr. Mutu, a Guyanese pathologist, was the first medical person on the scene and the first to examine the bodies of the victims. Mutu determined that there were fresh needle marks on the left shoulder blades of about 80 to 90% of the bodies. Some of the victims had been shot or strangled. The gun that Jones had reportedly used to commit suicide lay 200 feet away from his body. Mutu concluded to the Guyanese grand jury that all but three of the victims had not committed suicide but were murdered. When autopsies were performed at Dover, Delaware, the forensic doctors were not informed of Dr. Mutu's findings. The body, identified as Jim Jones, did not have Jones' chest tattoos and was so decomposed that it was not recognizable. Fingerprints on the body were checked twice for no apparent reason. It could have been that they did not match Jones, and while his dental records were not consulted at all. The discovery of the bodies and the recovery of the bodies and delivery to the United States was botched, with all identification removed and a delay of a week before they were transported. Rotting made autopsies impossible, and due to the decomposition, only 17 of the bodies could be identified in Delaware. And although the Guyanese had initially identified 174 bodies, that information was destroyed. Now, there were at least 200 survivors of Jonestown, and they were never contacted by the press. Jeannie and Al Mills, two survivors who were planning on writing a book about Jones and the cult, were murdered, while another survivor was murdered in Detroit, with the perpetrator never captured. Now, according to John Judge, yet another was involved in a mass murder of schoolchildren in Los Angeles. The acknowledged survivors of Jonestown were reportedly represented legally in the United States by Joseph Blatchford, who had been accused of being involved in the CIA infiltration of the Peace Corps. At the time of the Jonestown massacre, CIA agent Richard Dwyer, deputy chief of mission for the U.S. Embassy in Guyana, was present, and in a tape recording made immediately prior, Jones can be heard saying, "Get Dwyer out of here." At the end, Jones had accumulated assets estimated to be between $26 million and $2 billion. The government receivership determined a figure of $10 million. Much of this money unaccountably disappeared. Joe Holsinger, Congressman Leo Ryan's attorney and friend, said that a few hours after the murder of Ryan, he had heard from a White House official that we gave a CIA report from the scene. Holsinger wrote, "The more I investigate the mysteries of Jonestown, the more that I'm convinced that there is something sinister behind it all." And there's no doubt in my mind that Jones had very close CIA connections. And at the time of the tragedy, the temple had three boats in the water off the coast. The boats disappeared shortly thereafter. Remember, Brazil is a country that Jones is very familiar with, and he is supposed to have money there, and it is not too far from Guyana. My own feeling is that Jones was ambushed by CIA agents, who then disappeared in the boats. But the whole story is so mind-boggling that I'm willing to concede that he escaped with them. Not surprisingly, though, Lewis Joylin West wrote an article offering the sanitized version of Jonestown. Remember, West now is a psychiatrist, a CIA psychiatrist, and sans conflicting evidence or CIA involvement. Now, another cult with curious, somehow non-religious underpinnings is the Unification Church of Reverend Moon, the power behind literally hundreds of fronts and businesses internationally. Among the acquisitions of the Unification Church are the University of Bridgeport in Connecticut, which cost Moon a cool $50 million, and the Washington Times newspaper, which he admitted had set him back close to $1 billion. Before its incorporation in the United States, Moon was closely connected to the South Korean Central Intelligence Agency, with four of Moon's followers in positions of prominence in the intelligence organization. Bohai Pak, one of Moon's top aides, was a liaison to U.S. intelligence agencies for the Korean Central Intelligence Agency. In 1962, Moon traveled to the United States, where he met with CIA Director John McCone, Defense Secretary Robert McNamara, and Defense Intelligence Agency Director General Joseph Carroll. Pak was also known to make frequent trips to the National Security Agency at Fort Meade, Maryland. Moon has received large contributions from right-wing politicians in Japan, and in 1970, Moon's Japanese organization hosted the Rightist World Anti-Communist League annual conference. The Church of Scientology is another group with incredible sway over the minds of its adherents. The founder of the group, L. Ron Hubbard, was reportedly a member of naval intelligence during World War II, as well as being a friend and a participant in magical workings with Jack Parsons, the head of the California Ordo Templi Orientis group of Aleister Crowley. In one of his recorded lectures, Hubbard describes Parsons as being the most brilliant man that he'd ever met. Hubbard seems to have been a sincere Crowleyite, regardless of the protestations of the church hierarchy. And according to his son, Ron DeWolf, he was very interested in the creation of what some people call the Moon Child. It was basically an attempt to create an immaculate conception, except by Satan rather than God, getting a satanic or demonic spirit to inhabit the body of a fetus. This would come about as a result of a black magic ritual, which included the use of hypnosis, drugs, and other dangerous and destructive practices. He thought of himself as the Beast, 666 incarnate, the Antichrist. And Aleister Crowley thought of himself as such. When Crowley died in 1947, my father decided that he should wear the cloak of the beast and become the most powerful being in the universe. So as we can see here, we're dealing with witchcraft as a part of this CIA religious organizations come into the game. Notice that we're dealing with witchcraft and Satanism, along with this thing of mind control. Now stand by, we'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, again, go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. All right, we're talking about Mind Control, World Control, the Encyclopedia of Mind Control by Jim Keith. Now, in the last segment, I read to you on the Church of Scientology and how L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, was an intelligence officer in the Navy in World War II, and that this author believes that Scientology is engaged with or controlled by the CIA using psychology and psychiatry as a methodology of mind control. That may well be true, but I want to point out that the Church of Scientology, to be fair to them, publishes some very anti-psychiatric literature. Let me point this out. I'm looking at a magazine here called Psychiatry, Education's Ruin, Destroying Lives, published as a public service by the Citizens Commission on Human Rights. I probably have 10 or 12 of these magazines. All of them deal with psychiatry's betrayal, psychiatry destroying morals, psychiatry eradicating justice, psychiatry education's ruins. And it's published by the Church of Scientology. It hardly seems logical to me that this anti-psychiatry magazine being published by Scientology would link them with the CIA and mind control. They, at least in their magazines, their publications, are anti-psychiatry and very anti-mind control. So there's a little mystery. But then oftentimes we find that in intelligent circles, disinformation can be as valuable or more valuable than information. When we go to the Bible to take a look at what God thinks about mind control, it's called demonism or demon possession in the Scripture. And the Scripture has a lot to say about demon possession. It's a branch and a part of witchcraft. Saul participated in it. These witches and witchcraft practices are a capital felony. It's part and parcel with religion, and the Bible is not a religious book. Remember, it's a law book. It has been taken over by the religionists, no doubt about that. And it's the religionists that hold the Bible up and cry aloud concerning religion, but they misrepresent the Scripture in its totality. And in fact, it's the church which is in league with government. The church with its 501c3 tax exemption in league with government. That is the greatest deceptive force, at least in the United States, and I would venture to say worldwide. I can't speak for you people in Australia, New Zealand, India, or China, but from what I read and what I see, I would say that the religions worldwide are in league with their governments, who are controlled by Satan. And what we're really dealing with here is witchcraft and demon possession. And demon possession is, in fact, mind control. And notice the parallels throughout this book that connect the CIA, drugs, LSD, cults, religion, mind control, and now we see demonism. But I'm not sure that we can blame Scientology. I'm not sure that that report is entirely accurate. And it's quite possible that Hubbard continued to be connected to U.S. intelligence after World War II. According to former CIA officer Miles Copeland, arrangements were made between the agency and Scientology as well as the group moral rearmament. The CIA's covert support for MRA is confirmed by the late CIA agent Jim Walcott. Certainly, there cannot have been too much animosity between the CIA and Scientology, judging from the agency's Project Grill Flame remote viewing and the experiments therewith, in which 14 Scientologists graded clear and above participated. Now, according to a source quoted by Daniel Brandt on the early 1960s, Hubbard was given an award by the American Ordnance Association. According to this source, Hubbard was on a friendly basis with top generals and admirals and their military industrial associates. The Finders Group appears to be another cult related as a pet project of American so-called intelligence, and since 1987, the Finders have been on a roll expanding their real estate holdings with properties estimated to be worth more than $2.2 million. The Washington City paper reports that the Finders constantly walk the streets, following people home and taking extensive notes and pictures. Researcher Daniel Brandt was contacted by members of the Finders in 1984. They told him that they were members of the Information Bank and provided gratis a computer program that Brandt needed. One of the men who approached Brandt was later caught rifling the files of Washington, D.C. researcher Chris Jacobs. At that time, he claimed he was from the National Journalism Center. In another encounter, the same person showed a business card with the legend Hong Kong Business Today. According to Brandt, who visited the warehouse headquarters of the Finders in Washington, D.C., it was clear that most of the group members were world-class travelers. These world-class travelers, which included travel to numerous Eastern Bloc countries, as well as Asia, Africa, and Latin America, it was all a game to them. This was a small group, perhaps 40 adults, but they had no visible income to support their far-flung activities. Now, the founder of the group is retired U.S. Air Force Master Sergeant Marion David Petty. Now, he reportedly started the group as early as the 1950s, originally calling the group the Seekers. His wife, Isabel, was a support secretary for the CIA in Frankfurt, Germany from 1957 to 61. And Petty's son, George, according to one report, served in the CIA's drug activities in Air America during the Vietnam War. The three-page non-government memo of undetermined origin cited by Daniel Brandt provides additional information about Petty. According to the memo, Petty began his career in contact with a number of OSS agents and was the chauffeur to General Ira Hacker. He was a protege of Charles Marsh, who ran a private intelligence agency and received training in counterintelligence in Baltimore and Frankfurt, Germany. Petty's control agent was Colonel Leonard N. Wagner of Air Force Intelligence and the CIA, and his case officer was Major George Varga, who passed on instructions from Wagner until Varga died in the 1970s. Petty resigned, or should it be resigned, from the military only to don bell bottoms and beads and plunge headlong into the counterculture. One oft-cited incident involving the Finders took place in 1987 in Tallahassee, Florida, when the local police department was alerted to suspicious activities and apprehended two men transporting six children. According to the report of the police officers, the police had received an anonymous telephone call relative to two well-dressed white men, wearing suits and ties in Myers Park in Tallahassee, Florida. Now, apparently they were watching six dirty and unkempt children in the playground area. A Mr. Houlihan and Ammerman were near a 1980 Blue Dodge van bearing the Virginia license number XHW557, and inside of which was later described as foul-smelling, filled with maps, books, letters, with a mattress situated to the rear of the van, which appeared as if it were used as a bed. The overall appearance of the van gave the impression that all eight persons were living in it. The children were covered with insect bites, were very dirty, and most of the children were not wearing underwear, and all of the children had not been bathed in many days. One of the arresting officers voiced suspicions about the children being used in pornography in Mexico. A search warrant was issued for the finders in Washington, D.C., in their headquarters, and police entered the building on February the 5th, 1987. Special agents for the Department of the Treasury, Ramon Martinez and Linwood Roundtree, said in their report that during the course of the search warrants, numerous documents were discovered which appeared to be concerned with international trafficking in children, high-tech transfers to the United Kingdom, and international transfer of currency. The computer cult connection will rear its head again. Now, the report continued, further inspection of the premises disclosed numerous files relating to activities of the organization in different parts of the world. Locations that I observed are as follows: London, Germany, the Bahamas, Japan, Hong Kong, Malaysia, Africa, Costa Rica, and Europe. And there was also a file identified as Palestinian. Other files were identified by member name or project name. The projects appeared to be operated for commercial purposes under front names for the finders. There was a file entitled Pentagon Break-In and Others, which referred to members operating in foreign countries, not observed by me, but related by an MPD, that's a Metropolitan Police Department officer, were intelligence files on private families who were not related to the finders. The process undertaken appears to have been a systematic response to local newspaper advertisements for babysitters and tutors, and a member of the finders would respond and gather as much information as possible about the habits, the identity, the occupation, etc., of a family, the use of which this information was to be put is still unknown. It's a mystery. There was also a large amount of data collected on various child care organizations, and the warehouse contained a large library, two kitchens, a sauna, hot tub, and video room. The video room seemed to be set up as an indoctrination center, and it also appeared that the organization had the capability to produce its own videos. There were what appeared to be training areas for children, and what appeared to be an altar set up in a residential area of the warehouse. Many jars of urine and feces were located in this area. And according to researcher Wendell Menick, the author of Spies and Provocateurs, an encyclopedia of espionage and covert action, a telex was found in the 1987 raid and ordered the purchase of two children from Hong Kong to be arranged through a contact in the Chinese embassy there. In substantiation of the time of the raid, or at the time of the raid, a Chinese graduate in anatomy from Georgetown University was living with the finders. Hey, it seems like the webs we weave, and it looks like that what we're dealing with here is so wicked, so evil, so filthy, so vile, that we ought to stay away from it, don't you think? Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, biblical law from the scriptural perspective, and the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just go to the law school website, georgegordon.org, and send an email request, or call direct 417-273-4967 to order yours. Well, let's take a quick look here at David Berkowitz, the son of Sam Keller in New York, convicted of the Son of Sam murders in New York City. It was a series of murders. He was called the son of Uncle Sam, and evidence suggests the member of the children. The international satanic murder cult with links to the military. Terry Patterson, an Army buddy of Berkowitz, stated that when Berkowitz joined the Army, he entered a special program reportedly for profiled candidates of an unspecified character and was given hallucinogenic drugs, and he admits it was done by the brass. Now, Berkowitz may have known the source of his programming in the first handwritten missive that he sent to the New York police. He wrote, "I am the son of Sam. I am a little brat." The possible implication being that he is an Army brat. He also wrote, "I am on a different wavelength than everybody else, programmed to kill," unquote. Berkowitz joined the New York Police Auxiliary while in high school, and it is reported that he was tipped off from within the department when the police became aware that he was the or one of the Son of Sam murderers. Retired New York Police Department Detective Sergeant Joseph Coffey has stated that he was ordered to destroy a letter that was sent to Berkowitz by Police Commissioner Michael Codd, and that he carried out the order. Berkowitz has said that three members of the Yonkers Police Department were members of the cult responsible for the Son of Sam murders. A letter from Berkowitz that was withheld from scrutiny for 4 years by the police states, quote, "I, David Berkowitz, have been chosen since birth to be one of the executioners of the cult." Berkowitz estimated the cult to have several thousand members. He linked the killing of Arliss Perry, butchered in a satanic ritual at Stanford University in California, to members of the group in Los Angeles. Perry had only moved to California from South Dakota a few weeks before, and the killing was reportedly done by the LA group as a favor to a chapter in Bismarck, North Dakota. The Los Angeles group supposedly counted Charles Manson as a member before his arrest. John Carr, nicknamed John Wheaties, the son of Sam Carr, is one of the anonymous Son of Sam letters associated with Berkowitz and fits the description of one of the Son of Sam murders. Berkowitz has confirmed the man's involvement in the crimes, and Arliss Perry was murdered on Carr's birthday. I might point out that witches and warlocks celebrate birthdays, and the birthday of a witch or warlock is the highest holy day of the year for a witch. Carr is alleged to have been involved in Satanism since high school and was in the Air Force until being discharged a few months before the beginning of the Son of Sam murders. He was a staff sergeant and stationed in Minot, North Dakota, with the headquarters of the satanic group that he was associated with in Bismarck. He traveled back and forth between North Dakota and Yonkers, New York, where Berkowitz lived, with trips coinciding with several of the Son of Sam killings. Berkowitz was also identified by a witness as being in North Dakota, and John Hinckley, who attempted to assassinate Ronald Reagan, has stated that he met Berkowitz in Colorado. John Carr was receiving psychiatric counseling during the period of the Son of Sam murders, and after the slayings, a body identified as Carr's was found at his home in South Dakota, allegedly murdered for knowing too much, but identification on the corpse was questionable. Carr's brother Michael was an executive in Scientology and had received therapy for a drug habit in New York. Berkowitz insisted that Michael Carr was a member of the New York cult and involved in the murders. He also said that Michael and John were members of an offshoot fringe group connected to Scientology. And it's possible that this was the process that the apocalyptic cult formed by dissatisfied or disaffected Scientologists Robert de Grimston and Mary Ann McLean de Grimston and Charles Manson knew members of the process and may have been a member also. Michael Carr died in a car accident at the height of the Son of Sam investigation. The side window of Carr's sister's policeman husband, John McCabe, was shot out the next night as it was driven by another officer taking McCabe's usual route. McCabe had phoned in sick so that he could identify Michael Carr's body. At almost the same time, two friends of John Carr were forced off the road in a car in Minot, North Dakota. A Yonkers mailman who had been threatened by the New York group committed suicide a month after Berkowitz's arrest, and there were other murders, apparently linked to the cover-up of the Son of Sam killings. Abundant evidence proves that there were several persons involved in the Son of Sam murders, apparently all of them linked to a single satanic cult, although no others than Berkowitz were ever arrested for the crimes. Maria Devi Christos claimed that she was the reincarnation of Christ and predicted the end of the world on November 10, 1993. She planned to commit suicide with her estimated 12,000 followers in the White Brotherhood in St. Sophia Square in Kiev, the city they called the New Jerusalem. According to the London Daily Mail, she is young and sexually attractive with large, dark, coal-smudged eyes and full lips. Her posters, in which she wears long white robes, holds a staff, and has two fingers raised in a Christ-like gesture of peace, and they're plastered across Russian and from Russia, from Vladivostok to the western borders, and throughout the other Slavic states, Ukraine, Belarus, and Moldova. You know, if we take a look here in the scripture, I think we're going to find that there is a connecting link here with a thing that we called demon possession or devils. Let me read to you, in the time that we've got left, two or three of these examples in the scripture, where the scripture talks about this phenomenon of mind control, and it's not mind control by drugs or mind control in the conventional sense that we read about in science fiction. But mind control from the perspective of God, which is controlled by demons or fallen angels. And people invite these demons in through drug use, hypnosis. Mind control is something that we ought to avoid, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. But for some reason, it seems to be something that people desire, something that we want to play with, like a kid playing with matches and dynamite. Well, in Matthew 4, verse 24, and his fame, this is the fame of the Messiah, went throughout all of Syria, and they brought unto him all sick people that were taken with diverse diseases and torments, and those which were possessed with devils, and those which were lunatic, and those that had the palsy, and healed them. And as a result of that, a number of people started following him. Hey, this guy was something to behold. Notice that people were possessed by devils. Well, are there any examples in the scripture of people who were possessed by devils? What did they look like? How did they behave? And when we look at Matthew 8, verse 16, for example, there's a little story in here about somebody that was demon-possessed. Matthew 8, verse 16. When the even was come, they brought unto him many that were possessed with devils, and he cast out the spirits with his word, and he healed all that were sick. So people were brought to him that had these devils, demons, whatever it was, however they behaved, and he cast them out with his word. He ordered them out. They obeyed his voice. Could people be demon-possessed today? Could David Berkowitz or some of these murderers and killers, you know, like Manson and the Texas Tower murderer and so on, could these people actually be demon-possessed? Could the demon possession be induced by drugs such as psychedelic drugs and hypnosis? Could these people who have joined the army, like Berkowitz and others, have gone into the army into special operations, working through such things as psychiatry? You know, psychiatry and medicine, pharmaceuticals, government, religion, witchcraft, intelligence agencies, psychiatry, cults, mind control, demon possession. There's a thread that works its way through these institutions, these agencies. Pharmaceuticals turning out the drugs that alter people's minds, making them subjective or subjected to these demons that can enter them and control them. And notice that it's always done for evil purposes. It's murder. It's Jonestown with either murder or mass suicide, you know, whichever you prefer to call it. What would possess people to strap on explosives, get on a bus, and blow themselves up? What possesses people to get on airplanes with explosives and to blow up the airplane and kill the people on board? What is making these people do this? Now look back in just 50 years ago, some of you older people, can you remember anything like this going on in the 1950s, 40s, 30s? I mean, just take a look at the insanity that's going on today. How many of these Jonestown-type mass suicide murders can you recall in history? Have you noticed how many of these mass murders and murderers that we've noted in the last 50 years, which just kind of coincides with the reports that I've been giving you about the U.S. government and their experimentation, such as these stories of 1977 Senate hearings on health and scientific research confirm that 239 populated areas had been contaminated with biological agents between 1949 and 69, and some of the areas included San Francisco, Washington, D.C., Key West, Panama City, Minneapolis, and St. Louis. 1978, experimental hepatitis B vaccine trials conducted by the CDC begin in New York, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Government experimentation on citizens that don't have a clue that they're being used as human guinea pigs. And that's what's going on with these contrails. The government that we live under here in the United States, and I suspect that these governments around the world are satanic in origin, and they are, in fact, demon-inspired, if not demon-possessed, mind-controlled. Mind-controlled by who? Mind-controlled by Satan, the devil. Satan, the arch-rival, the antithesis, the fallen angel, spoken of in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28. Satan and his demons, Satan and the fallen angels, possessing human beings, mind-controlling them, probably with their own free will, probably because they want to participate in something, like Berkowitz, and he did, and look at the results. Stand by, we'll be right back. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. We're talking about mind control. Mind control is spoken of in the Bible in the terms, or the common usage is called demon possession. One of the better stories is in Mark chapter 5, verses 1 through 20. Listen to this story of a guy named Legion who was a lunatic, a demon-possessed fellow. They came over onto the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gadarenes, and when he was come out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with chains, because that he had been often bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. Neither could any man tame him. And always, night and day, he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying and cutting himself with stones. But when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him, and cried with a loud voice, and said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, you Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God that thou torment me not." And he said to him, "Well, come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he besought him much that he would not send them away out of the country. Now there was there, nigh unto the mountains, a great herd of swine feeding, and all the devils besought him, saying, "Well, send us into the swine, that we may enter into them." And forthwith Jesus gave them leave, and the unclean spirits went out, and they entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea, and there were about 2,000, and they were drowned in the sea. Well, those that fed the swine fled, and they told it in the city and in the country, and they went out to see what it was that was done. So they came to Jesus, and they saw him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion, and he was sitting, he was clothed, and he was in his right mind. And they were afraid. And they that saw it told them how it befell to him that was possessed with the devil, and also concerning the swine. And they began to pray him to depart out of their coasts. And when he was come into the ship, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him that he might be with him. Howbeit Jesus suffered him not, but said unto him, "Well, go home to your friends, and tell them how great things the Eternal has done for you, and has had compassion on you." So he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him, and all the people did marvel. So here's a clear story. It comes right out of Scripture. This guy was demon-possessed. He was a lunatic, crazy as a cut coon, as they say down here. And when the devil left him, when the demons left him, and there was more than one, there were many, the guy returned to his right mind. And that's what we've been discussing here. Drugs, such as pharmaceutical companies practice and deal in, is witchcraft. And pharmacists are dealing in demons, drugs, and witchcraft. Americans have become a nation of drug addicts. We Americans drug about 20% of our children with Ritalin. Now think of that. We have nearly 50 million children in public school, and 10 million of them are being drugged regularly by the school nurse. We're making a nation of drug addicts out of our children, and nobody seems to think that there's anything wrong with that. Drugs in America seems to be the panacea that everyone wants to get involved in. I guess it feels good. I don't even take aspirin. I avoid drugs like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. White sugar is a drug. People sometimes ask me, "Well, what's the difference between a food and a drug?" Well, cocoa is a herb. And in Genesis 1, verses 28 and 29, God said, "I'm going to give you every green herb, it's for food." A lot of times people say, "Well, then mushrooms must not be food." I don't think so. I don't think that the term "I'm giving you every green herb" prescribes that if it isn't green, you can't eat it. Carrots, after all, are orange. However, God thought that people could handle every green herb. Now, it's the government that doesn't believe that you can handle marijuana, cocaine, or bloodroot. And so the government comes along and they prohibit us from having every green herb. You can have most of the green herbs, but we don't want you to deal in poppies, for instance. Now, you'll find that all of these herbs, there's about 82 herbs that we have on our chart here, and things like poke, you know, which are poison. Poke berries are poison, but they're also an herb. And bloodroot is the active ingredient that kills cancer cells. And, of course, you can just about figure why it is the government doesn't want you to have any bloodroot, because, after all, you could treat and cure your own cancer if you had that. Now, not only is it money that's involved here, but it's also religion. And evolution is religion. The Bible is a book of law. God deals in law. Men deal in religion. And they use the Bible and call it a religious book, when in reality it's a law book. It says do this, don't do that. We don't like it, and so we don't follow its precepts. But let's take white sugar. You know, if you eat sugar cane, that's an herb. Sugar cane is not a crime. But what we do is we take the sugar cane or the sugar beets, and then we dehydrate it down and we create a product called white sugar. It could be brown sugar, too, but it's the product of the witch's brew. That's what you're doing. You're brewing these herbs up into a witch's brew of drugs. So drugs, then, are made from heat, cooking, processing. And you can only digest about 3 teaspoons of this white sugar per day. When you get over that, then it causes debilitation of your body organs. And then pretty soon you develop diabetes. Or you have heart attack, or you have a stroke, or you'll have some other symptom. We call these diseases. I feel bad. I don't feel good. I'm dis-ease. I'm ill at ease. So white sugar is a drug, but the cocoa leaves aren't a drug. Cocaine is a drug. Cocaine is a synthesis of the chemicals that are in the herb. When you eat the herb itself, it's just like honey. You cannot overdose on honey, but you can sure overdose on white sugar. And so what we do with the honey is we heat the honey, kill the enzyme, which destroys its food value and convert it into a drug. That Subi honey that you've got in the grocery store, you know, that real nice clear amber stuff, that's a drug. It's a drug because it's heated, the enzymes are killed, and then it's adulterated by putting corn syrup in it instead of honey, and then they call it pure honey. You know, the word pure means that it's 100% honey. It's either pure honey or it isn't. It isn't pure when it's got bee legs and bee bodies in it, and so we filter those out, then we call it pure. Well, the same thing is true, you know, when you heat that stuff up to 180 degrees and it flows about like water so that you can filter all the pollen, bee bodies and bee legs out of it, and then mix it with nearly 50%. Not quite. It's got to be at least 51% honey to call it pure honey. So 51, 49, or 60-40 or 70-30, that's all right. So we turn our foods into drugs. We heat them and we process them. Everybody knows that these processed foods kill us. You've heard that all your life. And so we have it in our minds here in America that what we'll do is we'll just eat a little bit of processed foods. We'll watch our diet. Cancer is called the cooked food disease. People that eat raw foods don't get cancer, and people who have cancer and go to all raw foods get over it. Cancer, cooked food disease. Coca-Cola, Pepsi-Cola, white sugar. Now let's take a look at beer, wine, and strong drink. The Bible has a lot to say about wine, alcoholic beverages. Preachers are really opposed. Religious people are just death on alcohol. The Bible is filled with scriptures that talk about alcohol. Paul told Timothy to take a little wine for his stomach's sake. The people of France have the highest consumption of wine in the world and the lowest incidence of cardiovascular disease. Isn't that just special? And that's because wine, taken in moderation, I'm not sure that the French take it in moderation. They might be a little excessive, but the bottom line is that alcohol in moderation is good for you. It's a food. But then we want to turn around and take our foods and process those foods and turn them into drugs. And Americans are a nation of drug addicts. We Americans smoke cigarettes, not because tobacco isn't an herb. Tobacco is a fine herb. There's nothing wrong with tobacco. It's the processing of the tobacco, the synthesizing of the nicotine, and then taking it into your lungs. It's not designed for your lungs. I don't know what nicotine is good for, but it's an herb. It's an insecticide. I know we used to use it in the chicken houses, you know, to kill mites and lice in an insecticide formula. But what we want to do is we want to mainline the stuff. You know, we want to smoke it. Kind of like crack cocaine. We want to smoke the stuff. Well, there's a process that you use to create these drugs. The drugs then induce mental incapacity, which leaves you open to demon possession. Now, take a look at these people that are blowing themselves up. These people are on some kind of drug or demon possession. And we didn't have that 50 years ago. In fact, I showed you that what we're dealing with here is our government, which is using you and me, the people of America, and probably you people in Australia and Canada and everybody else, as guinea pigs for this mind control. These people have it in their minds that they want to give us LSD and various and sundry drugs so that they can control us. And in reality, that's Satan using the CIA and the government's religion to control us and ultimately to destroy us. It's the exact antithesis. Drugs, psychiatry, allopathic medicine, mind control, these are the exact opposites to free moral agency and your ability to choose, to think, and to be who you are. So there's the story on mind control. I'll have to give it up right there. We're just about out of time. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. And for more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches 8 schools in family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement only. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to that homeschooling page at georgegordon.org. Well, there's the signal. It says my time is up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.